Evening, everyone. Welcome. We will begin our Tuesday, September 27th City Council meeting with call to order, which is what I'm doing now. And now we get to do the Pledge of Allegiance. Seaver, you want to start again?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Yes, thank you. He's our elder statesman. Okay, now we get to go to roll call.
Koch.
Here.
Transier.
Here.
Plocher.
Here.
Soling.
Here.
Funkhauser.
Here.
Merrick.
Here.
Tarulis.
Here.
Peterson.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Very nice. Okay. I have no amendments to the agenda. Are you waving to me? Okay. Oh. Hello. What? Blinded by the light. Man for man. But really, that was originally a Springsteen song. In case any of you didn't know that. Okay, we have no presentations. We have no public hearings. Citizen comments. Now, citizen comments on the agenda items, but I know we have a couple people here who have some other places they need to go. Do you want to step forward, introduce yourself?
Thank you.
Yes.
I appreciate it. Good evening, everyone. My name is Susan Clancy Bowles, and I am a candidate for the 2nd District Appellate Court. I'm not going to take much of your time, I promise. I know you have busy things to deal with tonight. So I just want to introduce myself. I want to explain to you, for those that don't know, what the appellate court is, so you can understand hopefully how important it is. The appellate court is the reviewing court for every trial court decision that is made. And the reason why that is so important is because the Supreme Court accepts less than 4% of the cases that are appealed to it. So what that means is the appellate court is really the court that makes the rule of law or establishes the rule of law that we live under as citizens on a daily basis. So that tells you how important it is. So experience matters on the appellate court. And the 2nd district, which we all part of, is 5 counties. So it's all of Kane, all of Kendall, all of Lake, all of McHenry, and all of DeKalb counties. So it's a huge area. It goes all the way up to the Wisconsin border. So very briefly, the reason why I'm running and the most experienced candidate in this race, 3 reasons, experience. So I'm in my 16th year on the bench. I'm the only circuit court judge in this race. In my 16 years, I have literally sat in every type of courtroom there is, from juvenile to felony to the state mental health hospital to specialty courts and drug courts to I now run the civil division. So literally wearing every single hat. The reason why that's important is because since the appellate court has to rule on every type of law that comes to it, as long as it has jurisdictions, you need to be able to understand the type of decision that a trial judge has to make in those different courtrooms and different standards and different rules of law. So again, as the only circuit court judge in the race, 16 years, leadership is the 2nd reason. I'm the immediate past chief judge of Kane County, so elected by my peers to serve the maximum 4-year term in that race. Loved every minute of it. It's a 24/7 job, but loved doing it. And now I head up the civil division. I was chosen by the Supreme Court to be only one of 15 judges across the entire state to help create the strategic plan for the Illinois judicial branch for the next 5 to 7 years. Again, my leadership in this race is unmatched. And lastly, because it's coming to Kendall County, I want to explain to you probably what I'm most proud of for being on the bench this entire time. I'm in the schools talking to kids, both high school and middle school students, about the dangers or repercussions of one poor decision and how it could affect their daily lives. And a judge that I work with and myself co-created a program back in 2015 for middle school students. And it focuses on cyberbullying, electronic harassment, and sexting, because that's how these kids communicate today. It's really one of only 4 programs that the Illinois Judges Association has adopted to give across the state. So judges have been trained across the state to give the program in their own communities. It's been given over 300 times. We've updated it post-COVID. We've been giving it a ton of times last spring and now this fall. We were just at Redley Middle School in St. Charles. We are down in Lincoln Park. Tomorrow we're coming to Yorkville Middle School. We're going to start with the parents, present the program to them so then they know what their kids are going to see coming up the following week to help foster the communication related to that. So again, really proud of that. And any questions, I'm happy to take. Anybody who has any, want us in any schools, we're happy to do that because that's really important. So I thank you for your time. I know you've got a lot to do here, but does anybody have any questions before I sit down? I've met a lot of you before just being out and about these past year, but anybody? Yeah.
Question. How do you see the emergence of remote court appearances impacting appellate process? Do you see it as beneficial or do you see it as kind of a hindrance?
It's a mixture. I think it was beneficial during the pandemic for sure because the appellate court really kind of didn't skip a beat during that time period. Just prior to that, the Supreme Court came down and issued a ruling to all the appellate court, there's five different districts, and said everybody needs to increase their oral arguments. That primarily was focused on Cook County because Cook County was not hearing oral arguments. So everybody else had to live by a rule that because Cook County kind of wasn't following the rules. But I think it's helped. It's given everybody access to the appellate courts. And this appellate court is located in Elgin. The second district is located in Elgin. So not having served on the appellate court yet, I think it can help because one of the issues with the appellate court is the time it takes on an appeal. If I have a case that goes up on appeal, it could be 3 years, even more than that, before a decision comes back. So then litigants are, everything is halted. And so justice, in essence, is delayed. By the time you go to a jury trial on a case, it could be 6 years since they made a final. So the hope would be the remote capabilities would help increase the efficiencies. It's hard for me to say that since I haven't sat there. And in my mind, just knowing at the trial court level how really things come to a halt, gosh, can't this be, there has to be more of an efficient process. So that's the hope. Yeah. So thank you all. I'm sorry, we have another meeting. We're going to Batavia. I thank you for your convenience, and I appreciate that. So thank you all.
In case you're wondering, would you say 16 years you've been on the bench?
Yes, in my 16 years.
Since she was 16 years old, just in case you're wondering.
Boy, there's some days it doesn't feel.
Well, thank you very much. Good to see you both. Excellent. Okay, do we have any citizens who want to comment on any items on the agenda?
I do.
On something on the agenda?
Yes, on the Roads to Roads project.
Perfect, come on up. And like everyone else, state your name for the record.
Okay, my name is Jennifer Rakes. I live on Baseline Road, and I've spoken with Eric before, and most recently Craig. And it's come to my attention, and I'm one of three houses on that road. And we heard that it's being repaved, which normally people are rejoicing about, and we are not. But we understand that it's a done deal, and that it's happening. And the reason I bring it up is because, I don't know, have any of you been on that road recently?
It's been a few months,
but it's I think it's the last road, Northern County here. It's pretty pothole. It's not really, you can't really see the striping on it. But it's pretty rough, as you know, and you've tried, and that's not, I mean, to say anything about what you've done for it, but the fact that it's in such rough shape right now, and it's pretty dangerous. I mean, cars are flying down that road. There's nothing to stop them, quite honestly. They're flying, they're passing, they're accelerating way over 55 miles an hour. I don't get my mail until it's dark outside and I don't see any headlights. So the reason I bring that up is currently there are no posted speed limits on that road. And so the fact that it is being connected to the El Main corridor and traffic is going to be increasing, which again, we know has to happen, is progress. But the fact that it's already fast and it's in such poor condition, we're going to be improving the condition of the road and thus the traffic and the speediness and then the danger. So I'm asking that there is a posted speed limit of 45 miles per hour or less. My other concern on that road is directly, if the majority of the road, for what striping you can see, is allowing for passing. Directly in front of my house as well, my next door neighbors, and the road down the, or the residents down the street. I have lost count how many times I have tried to turn into my driveway and someone either attempts to pass me or gets past me, despite my having my turning signal on. It's come to the point now where a couple hundred feet in front of my driveway, I start to edge, and I'm so sorry, Mr. Lucy, but I edge somewhat over the center line to kind of let them know, like, hey, I am turning. Labor Day, family member goes to turn in, someone is passing, he's got his turn signal on. That passer goes in the ditch, drives up, keeps on going. Very dramatic, very scary. But it's my family. I've got, you know, young adults turning into that driveway. I've got my parents turning into that driveway and myself several times a day. So I am asking that we put no passing striping in front of the residences. I'm not alone. I just watched it. I watch it, you know, in the morning. It's a speedy cut through to that Menards distribution center. I don't know where else everybody's going, but they're going fast and there's no lights to stop them. There's no signage to slow them down. And the striping is not on them to not pass either. So, and this is just touching on something else, another concern as far as the Elgin Main Corridor. I know we've spoken about the trucks and the signage and the limits. And so I just really hope that the limits and the restrictions stay where they are. It's not more than 8 tons. I didn't buy out there to live on a commerce corridor. I know things happen, but if we can keep that below 8 tons, that would be phenomenal. I really appreciate that. And then finally, I know that police departments these days are, you know, they're taxed. There's a lot of stuff happening and not a lot of support. But what is going to kind of solidify new signage, new striping, is enforcement of it. And I don't need somebody sitting there all day, every day. I mean, maybe once in a while, pull someone over, or hide in my driveway, or sit somewhere to just kind of put it on someone's radar that, hey, you know, people live here, this isn't a freeway, and just to make it safer, because with more traffic, improved roads, it's just going to get faster and more dangerous.
Thank you for your comments.
Thank you.
Anyone else want to comment on the agenda? Anything on the agenda? Anyone in Zoom land want to comment on anything on the agenda?
I would like to. I don't know if you can hear me.
I can hear you. Is it on something on the agenda?
Yes. My name's Elizabeth Metropolis. I also live on Baseline Road. So the agenda item 3.
Okay.
Moves to Better Road.
Thank you.
I actually just want to go on record saying that I concur with everything Jen said. We experience the same things. We want to see the same things happen on Baseline. We would love to live on a very nice, smooth road. We just want it to be safe for everybody that's driving on it as well as living on it. We understand, again, like Jen said, Yorkville police, I would think Sugar Grove is probably in the same situation where there's just not enough police officers to constantly patrol every single road. But we would love to see somehow more of a presence, because I am a believer, and we've only been living on Baseline since 2019, and that's a pretty short period of time. We have seen people just use it as a raceway. No matter what time of day, no matter what kind of conditions, dry, wet, icy, people are going sometimes just 55 miles an hour, but recently it's been 80 to 90 miles an hour coming down Baseline. And we are at the house that's at Baseline and Neal, so I think by the time they get to where we are located, the people are cruising, they're going very fast, and they're not slowing down when we are like cutting the grass or tending to the flowers or getting our mail. They just don't seem to pay attention. So I'm just here to concur with everything Jen said, and just stress our need for some support to increase safety on Baseline.
Thank you for your comments. Anyone else in Zoom land who would like to speak to an item on the agenda? Hearing none, we will go on to consent agenda. Is there a motion to approve the consent agenda for the minutes of the September 13, 2022 meeting and bills totaling $2,548,908.30?
So moved.
Second by Soling. I heard it first by Peterson. Roll call, please.
Cope.
Aye.
Plocher.
Yes.
Funkhauser.
Aye.
Terulis.
Aye.
Transier.
Aye.
Soling.
Aye.
Merrick.
Yes.
Peterson.
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you very much. Moving on to the mayor's report. We have many items. I'm picking up the slack for some of the committees. Thank you very much.
Hey, you always do my motion today.
It's a good point. That's a good point. Touche, right? So first, before we get to the written motions, I would like Mr. Evans to speak about a couple items. First, I want him to tell us about the story walk. Is that what it's called, the story walk?
Yes,
the story walk, which was over in Heartland Circle. That was a cooperative between the YEF, the Education Foundation, the schools and the parks and rec?
School district, the city, and the library.
Yeah, and the library too. That's fantastic. So tell us a little bit about that if you want.
The story walk is just something kind of new where you install in parks. We have 24 posts. It's a story. You can take your family or kids and kind of walk through each post and read the book. It's something the Education Foundation brought to us a couple months ago. We're very much in support of it. They're really responsible for maintaining it and having it installed in the parks and working with the school districts to get them installed. And then every 2 months, they're looking to replace it with a new story. And that'll be something we'll post on our Facebook page on a regular basis. And it's at the Junior Women's Heartland Circle Park.
Yes, and there was a ribbon cutting at 4, and there was probably 60 people for that. And Tim, you informed me that after 5 o'clock, it was even...
It was probably 3 times that at 5 o'clock.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, it's a great crowd. I've heard of today.
And my daughter got to run up the new sledding hill that was installed there, too.
It was recently installed when we did the basketball courts over there as well.
Yeah, it looks fantastic. It looks brand new. So thank you. And then also, we have the Yorktoberfest. I know it's really technically not a city event, but the city, obviously, the Parks and Rec helped set it up, and they use... Our space for it, but that's a Kiwanis event, correct?
Yes, and that's this Friday and Saturday. It starts at 5:30. We did just do the island project. It's been moved to the east side of the park, so it's a little bit behind the ComEd substation. That's Friday and Saturday at 5:30 on Friday, and Saturday, I believe, it starts at 1:30.
And I know Mr. Funkhauser, because you're a Kiwani as well, you ordered excellent weather for the weekend, correct?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Anything you want to add? Anything you want to add?
No, I think covered it. Yeah, Friday, Saturday, it'll be a great event coming up.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's one of the many events we have in town, and that's why people come here. So awesome. Tim, anything else? I know you've got another place later, but did I miss anything?
I would say the only other thing that in conjunction on Friday is Scarecrow Walks opens up at Riverfront Park, and that'll be open the entire month of October at Riverfront Park.
Oh, we'll get a lot of people from the event over there.
Yes.
That's awesome. Excellent. Thank you. Okay. Now we're on to the written items. So the first, I'm looking for a motion to approve 2022-39, the purchase of a single axle dump truck.
So, second.
Transier, Merrick. And then this is for delivery for next September is what we're told, Mr. Deuce, for $286,000, correct?
That is correct.
Yes. So we're still a year out. Any questions or comments? Roll call, please.
Plocher.
Yes.
Funkhauser.
Aye.
Terulis.
Aye.
Transier.
Aye.
Soling.
Aye.
Merrick.
Yes.
Peterson.
Yes.
Koch.
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your support on that. The equipment's been slow to arrive, but we are making progress on the equipment over the past couple years for Public Works and for the parks as well. So I appreciate, and the PD. So when the cops decide to chase people down Baseline Road, we don't pursue, sorry. So when we get those license plate readers up there, right? Anyway, so we made some good progress with the vehicles. I appreciate it. Okay, next is 2022-40, Blackberry Woods Performance Guarantee Call. Is there a motion and a second?
So moved.
Siever?
Second.
Second by Joe Arden.
Chair.
Okay. And this is the performance call is for, was it $16,000? We estimate there's $20,000 to $23,000 worth of work there, but we're getting no response from the, I don't think really, they weren't the original developer, were they?
They were not, but they did take over the developer.
Okay. So, questions or comments? Roll call, please.
Funkhauser?
Aye.
Tarulis?
Aye.
Transier?
Yes.
Soling? Merrick?
Yes.
Peterson?
Aye.
Koch?
Aye.
Plocher?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Very well. Next, 2022-41. Is there a motion to approve? And just so everyone knows, a couple people spoke in public, this is not to approve the bids. This is just to approve the program. We'll send it to engineers. The bids will be next spring, actually. But to approve the proposed 2023 Roads to Better Roads program.
So moved. Second.
I think it was Merrick and Peterson, is that correct? Okay. Questions, comments? Did everyone see the map? I got a nice, Brad, thank you for the map. Brad brought me this nice map. So press, if you want to look at it, you probably can see it online better than I can. But nice, pretty map. Making some nice progress here. So, okay. Questions, comments? Mr. Funkhauser.
So it's a little outside of the Road to Better Roads, since it's a developer obligation, or it's actually a city obligation that we have, is first called Bay. With the current improvements that we have, with the single family and the multifamily that are going in right now, I think we need to seriously consider the road connection out to 47. I understand it's been something that's been an obligation for us for years. It is rather expensive. But with a one-way in and that additional boost of residents in that area, we need to consider that. Whether it's in this plan or before we get too far down the road with the increased density, I think it needs to get worked into our road obligations, because that's going to take a significant chunk away from what we do the road to better roads unless we find it elsewhere in the budget.
I'm not disagreeing with your point, but I think part of it's going to be addressed with the Route 47 winding, isn't it?
But that's something that's been on the books. We've still got years before that's actually going to be built. That's the concern. If we're going to have residences coming online well before that's done, we can see that those two areas that are under construction now being completed before Route 47 is actually started.
That's a fair point. Brad, what is the, and I know we talked about this at staff level, what is a ballpark estimate to connect that?
Yeah, we had estimates that we prepared probably 5 or 7 years ago. It probably worthwhile to take a new look and update. It's more than just a simple connection, because IDOT will force you to put in turn lanes and what have you on Route 47. So it's a fairly substantial improvement. So, you know, it's acceptable. My partners will look at our cost estimates and then provide that information back.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt to at least understand it. That's a great point. Go ahead.
If I could provide just a little bit more context, it was north of $1 billion. I think it was even north of $2 million. Yeah, done it 5 to 7 years ago. And to Brad's point about the turn lanes, those are going to be designed in the Route 47 expansion project and would be fully funded basically by IDOT as part of their their design and construction of that. So anything outside the right-of-way, they will allow us basically to do it like a side order with the contractor at the time. We're theoretically we would get better unit pricing than maybe we can bid out ourselves, but that's not guaranteed. But that's been the major impediment. It's just we know that IDOT is going to come through and do that work. So if we do it now, we'd be funding some railway work.
So to Brad, update the pricing, how much time's involved with that? Nominal.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so we can at least get the updated numbers and we can have a discussion. I'm not disagreeing with Mr. Funkhauser, but I also agree that, you know, put millions of dollars in a project that might be thrown out in a few years. We have to think hard about it.
Yeah, I was just kind of curious what you kind of thought with the inflation and stuff right now. And that price of $2 million 7 years ago, is that double now?
I wouldn't say it's double, but it's probably 30% higher, 20-30% higher.
Okay, any other comments on the Road to Better Roads discussion?
Is there any particular reason why the section of
I'm sorry, what was the question?
Looking at the map, it's like a section of King Street that we're looking to close down. Is that where I read that?
Yeah, that'll be part of the design process that we'll talk about. Basically, there you have some access and topography and site distance issues that cause traffic accidents, basically. So our proposal right now is to save ourselves a little bit of money but then prevent traffic issues by closing it down at River Road there. So there's other ways to access River Road through the neighborhoods, and we're trying to funnel everything to a safer intersection, basically. And that will all be part of the design process. We'll approve an engineering agreement with EEI at some point in the future, presumably, and then we would talk about those designs before we go to bid.
Other questions or comments? Good questions. I guess good questions and comments. Okay, roll call, please.
Tarulis?
Aye.
Transier?
Aye.
Soling?
Aye.
Merrick?
Yes.
Peterson?
Aye.
Koch?
Aye.
Plocher?
Yes.
Funkhauser?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you very much. Good discussion. Next, we have 2022-42. I'm looking for a motion to approve a resolution authorizing support and permission for inclusion of the Marge Klein Whitewater Course Access Site and the Fabulous Fox Water Trail.
So moved.
Second.
Transier, and I think it was Tarulis, I'm not sure. Okay, so Tim, do you want to explain this one, please?
Basically, the Fabulous Fox Water Trail is just a partnership between the state of Wisconsin, state of Illinois, to highlight the 200 miles of Fox River that comes, part of that coming through Yorkville with the Marge Klein Whitewater Course. So it's a great opportunity for us to get the Marge Klein Whitewater Course, the river, out to the community, out to the public, people that are going to kayaking, canoeing, things of that nature, to try to draw them into Yorkville and have this highlighted. And then they're also looking for an application the national level to be a part of the national water trail around the country. So I think it's a great opportunity for Yorkville community to continue to highlight the Marge Klein Whitewater Course.
And no cost to us?
There's no cost. The only thing is they do provide the sign, but you have to assist and probably lead in installing the sign at River Front Park.
So we have to install a sign?
Yes.
They pay for the sign?
Yes.
Okay. So a little bit of staff time just for the installation. Okay. Questions, comments? Roll call, please.
Transier?
Yes.
Soling?
Aye.
Merrick?
Yes.
Peterson?
Aye.
Koch?
Aye.
Plocher?
Yes.
Funkhauser?
Aye.
Tarulis?
Aye.
Motion carries.
There are motion and second to approve the Treasurer's Report for August 2022.
So moved.
Second.
Second by Merrick, I believe. Discussion, roll call, please.
Soling?
Aye.
Merrick?
Yes.
Peterson?
Aye.
Koch?
Aye.
Plocher? Funkhauser?
Aye.
Tarulis?
Aye.
Transier?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Item number six, the 2022 tax levy estimate. We're going to move that to probably the next agenda, maybe the end of October, but we're still waiting on some information from the assessor of the county. Is that correct?
We're waiting from the actuary evaluation for the police pension to figure out what our contribution needs to be.
Okay. So I misspoke. We're waiting for something else. So okay. Number seven. Looking for a motion, number 2245, resolution approving amendment to the United States of Yorkville Employee Manual for a Drug-Free Workplace, and this is just inserting the federal law language in the manual per recommendation from our labor attorney. Dan, did you make a motion? I saw you nod your head.
So moved.
Okay.
Second.
Second by Peterson. Any discussion? Roll call, please.
Merrick?
Yes.
Peterson?
Aye.
Koch?
Aye.
Plocher?
Yes.
Funkhauser?
Aye.
Tarulis?
Aye.
Transier?
Aye.
Soling?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Excellent. Oh, forgot about this one on the second page. Page two, as Paul Harvey used to say, if any of you know who Paul Harvey is. Okay. That's pretty funny. So, 2022-46. KEH. Is that how you say KEH? Do you say, or do you say K?
Key.
Key. Okay. key development inducement resolution. So we have A and B. A is, and we're doing this as one motion, please. A resolution to induce the redevelopment of certain properties within the Yorkville Downtown Redevelopment Project Area with Key Development LLC and Key Development 3 LLC, and a resolution to induce the redevelopment of certain properties within the Yorkville Downtown Project Area Number 2 with Key Development 2 LLC. And just so you know, A is TIF 1 and B is TIF 2. And A is the bank building property and B is the FS property in the silos, correct?
I actually misspoke earlier. The silos are actually in TIF District 1.
Oh, okay.
So it's the silos and the bank together, and then 2 is the FS property.
Okay, so we'll take a motion and a second. We'll definitely have some discussion on this.
So moved. Second.
Merrick and Koch. Okay, we got the MM and the KK there. You know, that's nice.
We do what we can.
I know you do. You're very good. Okay, so Bart. Can I turn over to you or what?
Yeah.
Okay, please.
So this is an inducement resolution for three different properties. Again, the inducement resolutions, as you know, do not commit the city to anything. It basically protects the developer's ability in the future to come to us to ask for TIF assistance, at which point city council has to review it. So it protects their ability to get TIF incentives for everything they spend from tonight, assuming it's approved, up until the next time you see them, which is when they're proposing a project with a request in front of you. So again, it is three properties. Two of them are privately owned. The FS property, which is in TIF District 2, as the mayor mentioned, silos, which are in TIF District 1. So those are your standard kind of inducement resolutions and TIF deals. And then the third is our Van Emmon Activity Center, which is 3 acres, generally at the southeast corner of Van Emmon 47. And so what we're asking for you to do by approving the inducement resolution is actually to have us start negotiating for purchase and redevelopment of that property along with the TIF assistance. So under TIF law, we have wide latitude to be able to discuss with developers various proposals, bring them in front of you for consideration and approval at a later date. And so rather than go through the RFP process, which we just did with the old post office, which was unsuccessful, we have somebody here who has experience in redeveloping properties. So we're asking you basically to engage them to bring your proposal at a future date. So both Boyd and Pat Harbor are here, as I mentioned in the memo. I'm sure they'd be happy to introduce themselves if you'd allow.
I will allow. Thank you. Thank you both for sitting through our scintillating meeting.
Thank you, Mark. My name is Boyd. This is my good friend, Pat Harbor. I'm a lifelong resident of Yorkville, as is John. This is a project that we've all wanted to see happen. We go to events downtown all the time and walk by, and everyone says, look at those eyesores, look at that light there as well. We've always wanted to see this happen. Pat and I had worked together. Funny story, when I was an 18-year-old freshman in college, my first job in college was with Pat's construction company, and I actually did some work at the Amaral, the Rivney facility that Pat's company built in the jail out here, Kendall County Jail, which were built by Harvard contractors. So this is obviously the early stages. Pat has two partners, Howard Eckert and Mark Kahan, who have extensive experience developing properties all over the country, residential, commercial. The fact that we were able to convince them to come in and invest their time, energy, and talents on this type of project is a blessing for Yorkville. What you've heard about is the bank site, and you've heard about Key Development 2 and Key Development 3. What those three are, they're basically three different LLCs, but phase one of the project would be the old bank site, that's Key Development, and then phase two would be the second part of the project, which would be the Grain Co. FS site, and then the key three would be the third phase of the project, which would be the granary silos. I'll let Pat explain a little bit more about some of his experience and some of his partner's experience. But this is a huge opportunity for Yorkville. We don't have anything specific tonight, but Pat's company has been working with the Elma Institute of Technology. They have a professor and a handful of students that toured downtown with Christie. and their students are working on models and all types of new ideas for what downtown New York can be. So at this point, I'll just introduce Pat. He can say a few words about himself and the other developers. Pat.
Thank you. First of all, I too am a resident of the county. I live in Yorkville. It's my post office anyway. While I came far. I've been here for about 30 years, and I kept looking at downtown. I kept thinking there's got to be something there. After you built the course, the kayak course, and said, we got to do something here. Both my partners, I'm one third of the partnership, a key on the H, it's K-E-H. Howard Epper is the E. Howard was the leasing agent on Sears Tower. John Hancock, he did high rises. I've done multiple joint venture design builds with him and developments. Mark Kahn is a worldwide developer. He's developing Pueblo, Colorado's riverfront and downtown into an entertainment district. And he's a very interesting person. And so we have all worked together from time to time. We came together and are, I will tell you, we have a contract now to buy the FS in the South. Our vision is to have multifamily, create a town center for you. We're going to have kind of what we would call an entertainment complex. I'm tired of having to drive everywhere to go eat, so we're going to have more restaurants around here. And we think we can do a pretty good job. You did mention IIT, that's where I ended up at school, finishing, and my son graduated from there. Why did we bring him in? Because we wanted to get fresh ideas in here. We're a design build company. We have architects and engineers. But for something like this, we wanted it unique. We're not going to be Disney, but we're going to represent the county and the town. And I think we could have a hell of a project here. And we're going to commit a lot of money after this. And so we're just asking for the ability to open up and start talking to your people.
Thank you. Any questions? Comments? Thank you both.
Thank you.
Any discussion on this before we vote on it? Roll call, please.
Peterson?
Aye.
Koch?
Aye.
Clocher?
Aye.
Funkhauser?
Aye.
Terulis?
Aye.
Transier?
Aye.
Soling?
Aye.
Merrick?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. It's exciting. We hear about it a lot. It's very exciting. And thank you, Christy, for your time, too. Next, we have a park board appointment. Jorge Ayala, is there a motion and a second to approve?
So moved.
Merrick and Terulis. Oh, Koch and Terulis.
Oh.
I don't
know.
Craig and Terulis. My gosh. Did I get it right that time? Any discussion? Roll call, please.
Koch.
Aye.
Plocher.
Aye.
Funkhauser.
Aye.
Terulis.
Aye.
Transier.
Aye.
Soling.
Aye.
Merrick.
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Public Works Committee? Anything? Public Safety Committee?
No report.
Admin Committee?
You're already questionable.
No report. Okay. We didn't get this one on the consent agenda. We'll go back to EDC Committee. I was too chicken to talk about it. So, I'm looking for a motion. This could be so fun. I'm looking for a motion and a second for EDC 2022-32, an ordinance allowing backyard hoops enclosures for domesticated hens in certain residential districts as a permitted accessory structure and subject to certain regulations. Is there a motion and a second?
Second.
Okay. Woo. We got it on the table. Discussion, please. No discussion?
No.
Oh, okay. I was like, whoa.
Wasn't sure if it was going to get introduced by it or not. But yeah, this is something that's been discussed for quite a while. We've been back and forth on this one. This ordinance is very similar to what the Oswego has passed. Kind of taking all of Oswego's hard work and backgrounds on dozen different municipalities doing the research. And with that, and then with what we did in our 6 months, this is what we have coming forward. I think it's a reasonable ordinance. There's only one point that was still an outstanding point for the committee when it came out, and that was the perimeter fence around the property. That's the only thing that I would recommend to take off, because my intent on this is to try to make this as accessible as possible with having reasonable restrictions. The 4 foot solid fence, while I get some of the intent of, you know, dogs can be barking and those kind of things, it goes both ways, control dogs, control chickens, back and forth. So I think it's more burdensome and not quite as responsible from government to put that restriction. That's the only thing that I have, so that's the only item I want to discuss. I think everything else was pretty well discussed through the committee.
Mr. Koch?
I would want to vote on it the way it is. It wouldn't have come out of committee if it was left, if it was going to be a picket fence then. So I think changing it now here, it should go back to committee if that's what you want to do.
Are you on the committee?
Yeah.
That's me.
Jason. Mm-hmm.
So did you vote to move it out of committee?
Only because we agreed to keep it with the solid fence.
So you voted to support it out of committee?
I think it was 3-1.
So you voted no? Okay, so it wouldn't matter if the fence were there or not, you would vote no.
Jason, take your vote, not vote for it.
Right. Any other comments, questions?
Who enforces this? No, I'm serious, you're about to have...
Great questions.
Who goes and makes sure that they're only hens, there's not roosters?
The way it was explained to me, because I asked this very question today, because if this passes, I don't want to be burdensome for staff. If staff receives a complaint, they would respond.
Right. I can't tell the difference between a rooster and hen.
When they go cock-a-doodle-do at 3 in the morning, then you can't. Other than that, nope. So that's Mr. Koch.
The other thing I have with this whole thing is I could have lived with it with the bigger lots, but when it got whittled down each time to smaller and smaller, now we're talking quarter acre lots. I have a lot of residents in my ward, in the old part of town, that they're on small lots, and I get stuff all the time with them now with issues, and now this is just going to throw one more headache into the thing for me. And because I have two subdivisions that don't have HOAs, so they would be, to me, the headaches.
I'm not arguing.
I have nothing against chickens. I grew up with 100,000 of them as a kid, all the way up to 20 years old. And I was thankful for that, how that worked out. But I just know I can see the headaches coming to me. And one of it is important.
Imagine if we had the bird flu come through. Oh, boy. Did I see a hand over here? Mr. Poulter.
I agree with Chris. I think the fence is over. You know, I think it'll. No one will come forward with it because it's too much of a burden.
Then should they go back to committee?
That's why we're here to discuss.
I've not heard a motion or a second to amend it.
I'm making a motion to remove the fence.
Is there a second? It's a motion to amend.
Amend, whatever.
Yes, okay. So now we can have that discussion.
And then if that fails, then we'll go back to the original one.
So this...
Can I speak?
You may speak, absolutely.
I agree with Ken. If we're to move it forward, in my opinion, we leave it the way it is now. And then if staff feels complaints from people that actually want to have chickens, then we revisit it. But I think at this point, I mean, I don't think I have anybody in my ward that's asked to have chickens.
I have one.
Yeah, and Chris has got maybe 5 to 7. So for all this staff time, all this work, and keep amending it for that, in my opinion, is probably not the way to go. I think staff did a great job of drafting it the way it is now, and I feel that if somebody has a problem with it, when they go to get the application and they, maybe we solicit feedback at the application process, and if somebody says, hey, we don't like this, or this seems a little burdensome, then we'll have deeper discussion with it.
You're trying to get out of this discussion, hoping you're somewhere else. Talking about a chicken. Dan?
I'm assuming solid privacy fence or just a regular fence is going to be required. to keep predators out. Right? That's the purpose of the fence. Not necessarily
an opaque fence.
No, seeing the chickens, but
the discussion was to keep the dogs from seeing the chickens.
It was not for predators or anything. So it was to keep dogs from
that. That works the same way.
If you want to have the chickens, yeah. You're going to have a fence. You're going to have to keep the coyotes and the foxes somehow out of your yard. But it doesn't necessarily have to be a solid privacy fence.
Right. But the way it's written is you have the coop enclosed. You have the run, which is enclosed and covered. If you want more than that to protect your chickens, that's for you to do. But this is the minimum requirement. The discussion truly did revolve around, well, it's a problem for my neighbor's dogs, you know, running through the yard, those kind of things. But it goes both ways.
Other questions or comments? So, hearing none, we are voting on the amendment. So we are voting on the amendment, then we'll be back to the main motion with or without the amendment, depending on how you all vote, or we all vote. This takes five to pass the amendment. Okay, so just to make sure, we are now going to do a roll call on the amendment to eliminate the fence requirement. Roll call, please.
Plocher?
Yes.
Funkhauser?
Yes.
Tarulis?
Nay.
Transier?
Aye.
Soling?
Nay.
Merrick?
Nay.
Peterson?
Nay.
Koch?
Nay.
Okay. So the motion now stands as originally proposed in the packet, including the fence requirement. I better make some notes here.
Me too.
So we'll take a quick few second breather, okay? Tell me when you're ready.
I'm ready.
Okay, so any further discussion on the motion? So it's as it originally stands. No further discussion? Roll call, please.
Funkhauser?
Aye.
Tarulis?
Aye.
Transier?
Aye.
Soling?
Aye.
Merrick?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Koch?
Nay.
Plocher?
Yes.
Motion carries.
I didn't have to vote.
I was hoping you'd have to vote.
And I hadn't told any of you how I was going to vote. I was going to have to think about it. Okay, thank you all very much. Well, I tell you what, that was fun after all. Okay. Okay, well, since I skipped some of these other things already, or I went through them, now we're on to park board. Anything further? We have a full contingent of appointees, correct?
Yes, sir.
Excellent. Planning and Zoning Commission, Christy?
No report.
No report, thank you. City Council, anyone? City Clerk?
I do have an announcement. Announcement on the upcoming spring elections for 2023. If any residents want to run for mayor or alderman in the April 2023 election, we have posted information on the city's website regarding filing dates and signature requirements. The information can be found under the government tab on the city's homepage. There will be open position for the mayor and one alderman position in each of the city's four wards. Interested candidates should also check the state of elections webpage at www.elections.il.gov. The state's website has a tab at the top of the page that's titled Running for Office. This will lead you to the 2023 Candidates Guide, which contains information and sample forms for candidacy. Petitions were able to start circulating on September 20th. Petition filing dates are December 12th through December 19th. We will be open until 5 p.m. on that last day of filing on the 19th, and the actual election is April 4th, 2023.
Thank you very much. Normally you don't have reports.
Nope.
It's kind of nice, isn't it?
One time.
Community and liaison reports. Okay, perfect, that's fine. Well, yes. Dan, I was almost going to ask you, what does the fox say?
What's that?
I was going to ask you, what does the fox say?
What does the fox say? I don't know.
Well, when it's chasing after chickens.
I don't want another. I don't want that. Yeah.
Mayor's report number two, or continued. Oh, we have city building updates. So, we have a resolution, or I'm looking for a motion to approve a resolution for change orders relating to 651 Prairie Point Drive, a fifth set of change orders, and this is for a modification to some furniture. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Funkhauser. Bart, you want to talk about this briefly?
Yeah, we have an area within the community development offices. We originally planned to purchase 3 cubicles, full build out with B6. We did not think that we would need 6. Some staffing changes and then some operational issues brought to light that we would prefer to have one employee rehoused in that department, which then increases the need for at least one desk. And so we looked at it, and the best way to do that is to just buy a set of 3 so that you have all 6 up there, and then we move into the first building with all of the same furniture. So that's a proposal of 3 cubicles for about $15,000 to match the other one.
Questions, comments? Mr. Funkhauser.
Once we implement the full ERP, do we think that this position will move back downstairs to the first floor as we originally intended?
If the ERP was in place today, that person would be sitting downstairs.
Right. So the
a couple years from now, whenever it gets implemented, things can change.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Questions? Comments? Other than Mr. Funkhauser's?
No amendments on this one.
Okay, roll call, please.
Terulis?
Aye.
Transier?
Aye.
Soling?
Aye.
Merrick?
Yes.
Peterson?
Aye.
Koch?
Aye.
Plocher?
Yes.
Funkhauser?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the support, and I know staff does as well. Bart, water study update, anything?
No further updates.
Excellent. No, it's excellent not, but thank you. Any additional business? Any citizens who want to comment? You nod your head, yes, I couldn't tell.
Hi, my name is Molly Kremsky. I wanted to go over some things that I found in the plaintiff statutes with regard to nudity at the June 2022 South Bank Original Barbecue Drag Show. And that's this sheet you guys have on your desk with the yellow highlighting on it. It's not the statutes themselves that I'm interested in, but rather the impressive summary of the doctrine of secondary effects and the example of secondary effects on the community that they have included as an introduction to their statutes. Our ignorance of 46 years of debate, case law, and community study findings with regard to obscene entertainment have led us to arrogantly treat our ordinances as irritants rather than safeguards. Nothing could be further from the truth. Not only are these ordinances protective of the community, they also set up a framework by which community members' rights to obscene sexual expression can be preserved by creating appropriate areas and specific licenses and regulations for such activities. When ordinances are upheld, we have a safe and peaceful community. When they are not, we see protests and division. When nobody steps up to do the right thing, we see expensive lawsuits, or we become a city under judgment. Judgment doesn't always happen right away, but America happens to be coming into a period of judgment right now. God warns and warns, so this may be another one of those warnings. We will see judgment fall on church leadership and government officials, among others, in the last quarter of 2022. I'll start reading from the top of the sheet. The purpose of this chapter is to establish reasonable and uniform regulations regarding the location of sexually oriented businesses in the municipality. In order to minimize and control the negative secondary effects associated with sexually oriented businesses within the municipality, thereby promoting the health, safety, and welfare of the citizens of the municipality. The provisions of this chapter have neither the purpose nor effect of imposing a limitation or restriction on the content of any communicative materials or communication, including sexually oriented entertainment. Similarly, it is not the purpose nor effect of this chapter to restrict or deny access by adults to sexually oriented entertainment protected by the First Amendment, or to deny access by distributors or exhibitors of sexually oriented entertainment to their intended market. Furthermore, it is not the intent of elected or effect of this chapter to condone or legitimize the distribution or exhibition of entertainment that is obscene. If you see in that next section there that's highlighted in yellow, that represents years of debates, court cases, and community studies that went into forming adult entertainment statutes in every city's code. And we're now choosing to toss that all out the window. A through M outlines the secondary effects on the community that have been proven by community studies. Hopefully you all recall that per the Supreme Court, Yorkville need not do its own studies. These effects have already been well established, and I'll read a few of them that are pertinent to our situation. A, sexually oriented businesses lend themselves to ancillary, unlawful, and unhealthy activities. We saw this with the Meatballs lingerie shows. I believe they had, there was urination in the parking lot and illegal parking. I'm going to skip B, you can read it yourself, but monkeypox could be a concern when we're bringing sex workers into restaurants. C, studies conducted in other cities have demonstrated a correlation between sexually oriented businesses and a decrease in the residential and commercial property values. D, studies conducted in other cities have demonstrated a correlation between sexually oriented businesses and increased crime in the neighborhood, including sex-related crimes like prostitution, obscenity, and sexual assault. This correlation is especially acute when more than one sexually oriented business is located in a neighborhood, and when sexually oriented businesses are located near a public open space such as a park, cemetery, or school, and that is the case with South Bank. E, studies conducted in other cities have demonstrated a correlation between sexually oriented businesses and increased harassment and propositioning of women, children, and the elderly in the neighborhood. I'm skipping F. Going on to G, location of sexually oriented businesses in a neighborhood can create a sex for sale reputation in a neighborhood. H, the foregoing findings raise substantial governmental interests and concerns, or at least they should, which is why we have ordinances and zoning laws. I and J talk about limiting location. J, the municipality can affect reasonable location regulations to improve these negative side effects. K talks about moving these kinds of things to a manufacturing district. L and M talk about the locations being distances, certain distances, and these are the Plano statutes. We have our own distances in our ordinances, but keeping them away from schools, daycare, cemeteries, parks, bike paths, forest preserve, public housing, churches, and also away from residential areas. The secondary effects of the obscene shows at South Bank will occur whether or not you admit they are adult entertainment, whether or not you admit that they violate our ordinances. That's not my opinion. It's legal and scientific fact. Deviants will come from all around the county to go to these shows because they aren't allowed in other cities. I have seen drag shows in Plano, Lake in the Hills, and Geneva. They don't even come close to the trash that's being allowed to go on at South Bank. People will come because they will be able to immerse themselves in an adult entertainment environment without having the stigma of going to a nightclub or a gay bar. I know, Mayor Purcell, you're on board with bringing business to Yorkville, and I think that's good, but we can't allow anything that people seem to enjoy. It's the City Council's job to balance financial benefits for bars with quality of life for everyone else in the community. It's foolish to sacrifice our city just to pack our bars. We have ordinances in place for this very reason. We put ourselves at risk by ignoring these ordinances and ignoring the knowledge, wisdom, and legal precedent and case studies that laid the foundation for the formation of these ordinances. In this case, these ordinances are about exposure of the buttocks have been put in place for very good reason, and we have 46 years of evidence to prove what I'm telling you is true. I'm hoping to do a little research on the Barbie Queens that I can share with you guys. I did research on a daddy-daughter drag team that is trying to schedule a story time in Plainfield this week. These people are, in the truest sense, sex workers. They spend most of their time entertaining in gay clubs, and their social media pages are hard to stomach. We are inviting them and their fans, who are cult-like, into downtown Yorkville with our fingers crossed that they will have the judgment to determine what is and isn't appropriate. Let me assure you that they won't be able to do that. I have videos if you need evidence. We all saw how well that plan worked out back in June at South Bank. I'd really appreciate us moving this into a committee so this can actually be discussed. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else in the public want to speak?
Nothing necessary for evil contrivance for good men to do nothing. We are here tonight because the city council has put radical leftist woke ideology out of the concerns of the citizen and the laws and ordinances. When buttocks are purposely exposed during live entertainment, you have called us haters and bigots for asking you to follow your ordinances. I believe we have reached a tipping point. You forgot that you are elected public servants, the people, the ones in charge. Every member of the city council should consider seeking alternate counsel. You have been giving counsel that is incorrect, and I will be filing an ARDC complaint regarding attorney work advice. On the afternoon of September 3rd, I was volunteering at the Yorkville Festival behind Beecher Center. I witnessed Mayor Purcell drive his ACE pickup truck into the fair area and park behind the first tent inside the entrance. Mayor Purcell got out of his vehicle and directed two on-duty Public Works employees to unload his pickup contents into the tent. With me being two tents away, I noticed Mayor Purcell greeting many who were entering the fair. I noticed many people walking from the mayor's tent carrying drinks. I asked them if there was a vendor at Giant selling drinks. They all replied they had gotten the drinks from John. I asked John who, and they all replied, John the mayor. Many volunteered they'd been given drinks containing alcohol by John. I asked several why. They replied, that's just John. You know how John is. He said, I don't understand. This behavior went on between 4 to 7 p.m. at the time I was there. Mayor Purcell behaves as though he is above the law. He dispenses alcohol to beer without permit to dispense alcohol or liquor license. Mayor Purcell needs to resign as mayor today.
Thank you. Anyone else? Well, I will just respond to one thing. I think it's appalling that we would suggest at a public meeting that we wouldn't want a gay bar in town. It sickens me that people think that way and come to our public meeting.
We have proper zoning and licensing for the statute.
No one said
we
have. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second. Roll call, please.
Koch.
Yes. Yeah.
Clocher.
Yep.
Funkhauser.
Aye.
Tarulis.
Aye.
Transier.
Aye.
Soling.
Aye.
Merrick.
Yes.
Peterson.
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you very much. Y'all have a good night.